Hey, you guys, this is your Knockouts World Champion, and you are listening to Tights and Fights.
Tights and Fights Podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Hey, podcast, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blew my mind. Hey, podcast. And that's all I'm doing. I'm not doing any more. Anyone listening to this at home knows I don't
Hooray.
Sing. You know I don't.
You were fantastic.
Do this.
Stop, please.
Thank you, Hal. I mean, it's not 1999. This is not my school production of Oliver. Like, we don't go back there. But I did it for a very special reason because we have a very special guest who we'll introduce in a second. Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity it deserves. I'm the Linza Circle, Lindsay Kalk, and I'm joined today by my fellow member of the Nation of Conversation, the Lubl Influencer.
I'll take it.
Hal Lublin.
It's all pictures of my meals and outfits.
I insist. Follow him on TikTok, you guys. Danielle Radford should be able to join us later, but do you know who is here right now? Our special guest. She has been a champion across multiple companies, including the WWE and Impact Wrestling, and you recently saw her as part of the 2022 Royal Rumble.
Mickie James, Impact Women's Champion. Nothing she hasn't done, nothing she hasn't accomplished in the WWE.
No stranger to the high stakes and the high pressure of the Royal Rumble, or WrestleMania for that matter. Mickie James knows full well what's at stake right now.
Listen
to this place.
She's also a multi-hyphenate, a million other things, which I spent all of yesterday checking out, so thank you for that. It is the one and only Mickie James. Mickie,
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. That was very nice. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's what we're here for. We're just here to hype you up. We're hype men today.
I like it.
It has been a busy few months for you. We're just going to dump straight in. We have a ton of questions for you. You have won the Knockout Championship for the fourth time. You successfully defended said championship. You made headlines by bringing said championship to the WWE Royal Rumble, which is amazing, and we were very excited. We did a whole episode about how much we love you, which is, I recommend going back and listen to it if you really want to feel good about yourself.
I like to feel good about myself.
I just say, you're having a bad day, go listen to a podcast about how great you are. I recommend it. But because of that, we really, really, really want to know, can you tell us a story of how that came to be, how your appearance in the Rumble came to happen?
Yeah, honestly, I think that Johnny Ace, he reached out to Scott first to make sure that if he was to ask for a specific talent or anything, if it would be okay with Impact, if there was an arrangement that needed to be made on a business level, because it is corporate structure and stuff. Scott reached out to me to even see before he even had, of course, Impact and WWE have worked together in the past when Ric Flair went in the Hall of Fame and Christian Cage came over, and there's been those open door kind of relationships in that sense. And he came to me and asked me if I'd be interested. And because of so much stuff that has transpired, like, I was grateful. I was like, yes. Like, especially if we can create all these other little things and make these moments happen, this, then yes, because I just felt like that closure, and I just had such an amazing career there and worked with some incredible women. And I felt like it all got overshadowed by this other thing. And it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair to my career. It wasn't fair to their careers. It wasn't fair to all the stuff that we did together to have like all these like historic moments kind of get overcast by this other thing. And I'm like, I don't want that to be my last thing. The last thing that the fans remember me for, even though it was a powerful thing. And I'm not sorry because it's put in a really strong change across the board. I don't want that to be the last thing that the audience just remembers of the legacy of Mickie James, and to be able to go back and do this monumental thing and to be a woman. And since it hasn't been done since Dan Severn and Jeff Jarrett, I mean, that was so long ago, but of the modern era, of the modern age, and to have a woman do that, obviously my history at both companies, my loyalty to both companies, it was just a good piece of business. And I think it was good for wrestling and not just women's wrestling, but it was cool to be a badass babe and do it. Just no offense.
No, I have a question about that. The experience of coming out at the Rumble, because you're someone who, you talk about how you're remembered, and every time you've appeared, especially in WWE TV, the crowd, like, not only you remembered, but You are celebrated. People, you know, you can't forget what you've done and what you continue to do. So when you came out for your entrance at the Rumble and people knew you were coming, how did that feel? Was it different than other times that you've maybe returned? What was that experience like?
It was different. And I think because it was everyone, and it was different from the vibe backstage. And there were just as many people who wanted to see me win and go like, oh, this is going to be awesome for wrestling or whatever. There was a lot of people saying, there's no way in hell, like, she's out of her mind. There's no way that she's going to be hardcore country. There's no way that they're going to let her bring the title on the thing. There's no way that they're going to do all of these. She's going to come in and get thrown right back out over the top. What is she doing? She's an idiot. Like, she just wants to get embarrassed one more time kind of thing. There was a fair amount of that. I was like, wow, it just shows. It really goes to show people's mindsets on things, right? And how they think. But I, of course, I'm like, I know I feel in my heart like I've made an agreement. And I think that these are the things and it's going to be an awesome night. And so when there was those levels of the WWE audience had never seen hardcore country, and it was something that I always wanted to present to them. It just, you know, we couldn't get it to make sense or whatever. And for the first time, they saw hardcore country Mickie James, and they heard the music. And it also kind of proved my point that hardcore country Mickie James in a WWE world would have been really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And so then there was that moment. But then also to come and then to jacket and then to show that I had the belt with me, and it's the Knockouts belt. And then for them to say that on top of that, it's the Knockouts world champion, you know, and then that, like, it was layers to the reactions, because I think that, as you know, you go down. I was so amped up too. Like, I couldn't celebrate because I was just had all these things in my mind. Like, I couldn't celebrate until in the moment as it was really happening. I'm just in my mind all day, like, waiting for a shoe to drop of anything, because you just never know. You just never know. And it worked out. I could not have asked for a better moment. I couldn't have asked for it to be bookended with coming in with Michelle and then it ending with Lita, two women who I have so much history with as well. And I felt like I did a really great job of, like, representing the championship and the women who have held that championship and that division, the Knockouts division, but also to remind people of who Mickie James is and the legacy that she has there as well. So it was just a good night, and it was a good night for wrestling, because now all those things that people were like, oh, these dream matches that they never thought possible, you never know.
Everything's possible. Yeah. Everything's possible in wrestling. One of our favorite things about this year's Women's Rumble was the storytelling. There was such just an intense mass of layered stories that went back literally decades. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? You mentioned coming in with Michelle. I had personally put out into the universe for you to punch her in the face with the belt, but that's just me because I was watching back then. Yeah, I was like, all I need is just for Mickie to hit her in the face with the belt and say, have that pig cake, and that's all I needed.
I'm so sorry I disappointed you, because I didn't hit her in the face with the it's belt fine. Per se, but I did hit her in the face.
Like you say, there's always time. So
maybe next time. I thought it was bookended perfectly. I mean, 2010, my last run in WWE was the, you know, with Michelle McCool and Layla and Vicky Guerrero and the whole Mickie James storyline. And that storyline really, you know, elevated them and put them in that, like, real next leveled up, like, monster heel type of role, like the mean girls of the locker room kind of thing.
Sorry, Mickie James, we warned you.
But that was the last thing you saw from me in that first run. And then I, you know, you go through, and then obviously I had a chance to mix it up with a lot of the other girls, but I was in Lita on television. What, Survivor Series? Like, I was that whole, like, one arm tied behind my back and the blindfolded match and all the stuff where when I finally became victorious over her and retired her at Survivor Series, like, that was a huge moment. I think it was a huge moment for me too, because I had always wanted to wrestle with Lita because she was so special to me in the entirety of my career and everything that she did. So that to be able to retire her was like a really full circle special moment. And obviously she's come back because nobody ever really retires in wrestling, sure. But you know what I mean? Like, it was really cool. So for her to end up eliminating me, I was okay with it. I mean, I wasn't because I wanted to win.
Of course.
Now I'm not at WrestleMania, and I really had liked the idea of champion versus champion at WrestleMania. But again, maybe next year.
I have a question for you because, you're such an important part of both the history and the present of women's wrestling. What kind of responsibility do you feel right now at this current time where you have all this incredible stuff that you've done and more stuff on the way? Where do you see your place right now? And what kind of impact do you want to have in this moment?
I hope that I inspire the women, you know what I mean? Inspire them, because when I first broke in, they pretty much told me that like the longevity of a female in this business was 5 years on television. Like you would have a 5-year run. So whatever it is, like make sure you make your money and do your backup plan, right? And I feel like there's been a fair amount of women, myself included, that have proved that old philosophy wrong. And, you know, that you can really do, like, especially now, we can really do it all. We can come back from having babies. It's not like you're done with wrestling once you have a baby or a family. Like, we can do so many things. And now, you know, it really is limitless, the possibilities, because we're allowed to do so many more matches. But I hope to be able to help, you know, the future and kind of guide them and maybe make it a little easier and a little safer for a long time. Like even, and I'm grateful for, I was trained by pretty much all men, right? Like that was all my trainers, because there weren't a lot of females who had made money in the business and were wrestlers that could then lend a hand to the future talent. Now there's an immense amount of those women who have been there, who have made money, who know what it takes, you know, as a woman in the industry to really carve out and make your mark and make yourself unique and to make money, because at the end of the day, it's a business, mm-hmm. right? Right. That's the cool thing is like, and I think that mentorship and I wish I had had that. Like I'm super grateful for all the men, but there were these things that they couldn't really relate to because they don't understand that world. And even from a storyline perspective, you know, we've only watched wrestling since it's, you know, pretty much since the birth of it, since the beginning of the time, we've only seen wrestling from a male's perspective and women's wrestling from a male's perspective of what that looks like. So to have more female voices, strong and women who do know firsthand of how to create those stories and create that magic that is unique to a female audience, that is unique to our LGBTQ+ community, because those men don't necessarily how to speak. And I feel like that's where we kind of lost some of that core audience. And we had the women fall off is because we weren't talking to them. We weren't speaking to them. And so you need people in there to speak to that community specifically, you know? So
100%.
Maybe I can be that lady or one of the ladies.
You are already one of those ladies.
One of those ladies.
I feel really good about it. Okay. One of the things you mentioned there were matches that women can have now versus the matches that women used to be allowed to have, she says in inverted commas. I would love to know, are there any matches you would still love to do? Is there anything that's still on your checklist?
Oh, God. You know, I say like there's ideas of all these matches, but when I was preparing for the Texas Death Match, like mentally and physically, and I've been doing this wrestling thing for a minute, and it hurts a lot. You know what I mean? Like it took me a week and a half, I feel like, to feel human again after that match, like to feel like a normal human being. So those things, you know, I think a pure rules match would be cool to have, like something like that more, because I think the technical wrestling, although I do know how to do it, I've always been a performer and an entertainer. Mm-hmm. So I've always leaned more to that. Not that I didn't. I have had, you know, trained underneath some of the best in the world. So I do know how to do it. I just, you know, stylistically go a different way. You know, I've been in cages. I've done hardcore matches. I was the first woman in the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match way back when with Jeff Jarrett, you know, like false count anywhere. Last knockout standing.
Ooh.
Pretty great.
That'd be great.
I wouldn't be mad about it.
Yeah.
Is intergender something you are interested in?
You know, And this is my old school process, but I, first off, there's so many incredible women out there right now that I haven't wrestled yet. Yeah. And I love and support and lift up women's wrestling. So I would like to wrestle a lot of them. I still like the idea of when told right, when the story's told right with intergender wrestling or whatever, it is fun. And maybe that's just the type of story I like to tell. I do appreciate watching you know, hello.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I really genuinely apologize.
Don't apologize. It's all good.
My laptop broke. And so I've been using a loaner for a show I was on. And today was the day that they decided that my loaner was no longer going to work.
Well, your glasses are fabulous.
Don't talk to me about fabulous, Mickey James. We're not going to be like, do not talk to me about fabulous. Like, I can't even handle it right now.
This is how ADD I am. I just completely forgot what we were talking about because I was distracted by your beautiful glasses.
You absolutely can't do this to me right now.
Intergender wrestling.
Yeah. You nailed it.
I remembered.
We asked you about intergender and you nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, I do appreciate it. I'm watching like Jordan and Matt and I'm thinking, oh, this is cool. This is awesome. But I've always done it from the perspective of, if my husband, which he would never do, who is, you know, 250, 60, 70 pounds. I don't know. He's going to be mad that I don't know his exact weight. Don't tell everybody how much was to punch me in the face. I would probably be knocked out. I would probably be really hurt. You know, fortunately for me, he doesn't do that because I would also hurt him very badly once I woke up.
There you go. And that's what's important.
Well, I would duck, obviously, because I'm quicker. I'm faster. Yeah.
Quick as a cat.
Yeah, but I do appreciate it. Like, it's really cool. And I think that those things are, I feel like a lot of things are, that's the beautiful thing about wrestling, and it's a form of artistry, right? So there are acquired tastes. I don't love hardcore matches. I find them very difficult to watch. Yo, but there is an audience that appreciates that. And there's also good workers to be able to tell those stories within those matches. Like, you know what I mean? So as long as you're, doing the art of telling the story and not just going out there and doing moves for no reason, then sure. I love it. I like it.
I like it if you love it, Mickey James.
I always like to ask this question whenever I get a chance to talk to somebody who wrestles professionally, because the divide between we're in this age, and we've been in this age for a long time now, with the quote unquote smart fan, just the fans who have access to rumors and whatever information, and the curtain has come down in some ways. But I always think and concede that fans don't even know a fraction of what they think that they know. So I'm curious you as a performer, what is one thing that you wish fans understood or knew about wrestling that would make it not only better for them, but better for you?
Nothing.
Oh, really? You're fine with
like, it's cool. Like, in the sense of, there's nothing more that I want them. I don't want them to overanalyze it. Like, you don't go to the movie theater. You don't go there to watch, you know, haven't been to the movie theater in a long time. So please forgive me, but you don't go and then go like, well, did he really do that? Was that, you know, you think he could really do that in real life or any of that? You don't second guess it. You come to the show, you enjoy the show, you allow yourself to get lost in the night and to get lost in the stories and to get lost in those moments. You don't sit there and nitpick and question it to death. But there's that in everything, from people who go to the museums to look at the art and they'll nitpick, you know, Van Gogh to death. And you're going like, what? it really is, because it is. And I say that it is an acquired taste because it's a form of art. And so there is certain things that your taste prefer over other things, but it doesn't mean it's right. And I don't think from a corporate standpoint, it's a smart move to cater to those specific fans, because they're such a minor portion of the whole audience, that if you start to cater to those people, that you lose the casuals, you lose the little kids that are coming with the parents who just want to have a good time and watch wrestling. Right. And those kids will, if you can, you know, you make them a fan of wrestling, then will be a fan of wrestling for life, you know? So it is cool to have like a match or people that kind of cater to that vein, because obviously they are there and you need to talk to them, as you do any group of people. However, I don't think that, you know, you should make that your focus, because it's really a small, that they really are the smallest portion of fans. The only difference is they're the loudest on social media.
Right. Yes, they are.
You know, like, because a casual fan is not going to sit there and tweet about the match that they hated and why they hated it and who should be booked there instead. The casual fan is just going to be like, cool show in Raleigh, North Carolina. Thanks at whoever. That's literally all the casual fans do. So we don't see as much of that on social media, because those are the people that aren't like rapidly formulating an opinion. And that's also the thing of social media, is that everybody can have an opinion and and be heard.
Whether they should or not. And they're going to tag you in it because they really want you to see it. They really want you to see it. Yeah. I am just in love with the idea of Van Gogh having trolls. Like, just like back in the day, walking around and someone walks by and like, I could do that. Yeah. I could totally see the brush strokes.
Nice self-portrait.
Oh, God, they've always been amongst us. They've always been amongst us.
Yeah.
I would love to talk to you about NWA Empower. We all watched the show. We all loved the show. We did a whole feature on that, too. It was such a wonderful, wonderful evening, amazing experience. Will there be another? Can you let us know? Will it happen again?
I'm going to say yes. I have talked to Billy about it, and that was always the original plan, is to do it at least an annual event up to the anniversary show. So I still have to, I've been so slammed because obviously I'm the champion right now, as you see.
I heard that. Yeah. I got some questions about that too.
I mean, we had heard that probably more than likely been talking about that for 2 months, because we're very excited about it. It's so pretty.
Love it.
I do. I love it. And then I slap it a lot like that so I can let it know, you know, and then I like to shove it in the camera's face like that and say, take a look at it.
It's so shiny.
It's so cool.
No, it was an incredible night. And I hope that we can do it again. I hope that it's just the beginning of so much more stuff, period, to come. And I'm really grateful for that. I was grateful for Billy to give me the opportunity and to trust me to take the reins and really just kind of put me in charge of a lot of that. And then to be able to lean on the other companies and to use Billy, obviously talk to Tony and use that relationship to have Camille on AEW, but then my history and my relationships with Impact to be able to do so much there and have Deonna and Melina, a match that I was so excited to see, but then do all that and kind of go into it is great. It was just great. And it really showcased, I felt like every company coming together and really showing that their women's roster matters to them and to, you know, have this one night, whether it's annually or whatever, but to have this one night to, you know, highlight their ladies and to show that they matter. And we're all on the same team here. And it was great. And it was beautiful. And I couldn't have done it without my team and without Jazz and Medusa and Gail. And, you know, it was cool. And it was cool to have women making those decisions and putting those matches together, because it's not something that you see. So
do you still watch a lot of women's wrestling from other companies? So, you know, what's happening in AEW? What's happening in WWE?
I try to, I don't know if you're aware, I have a 7-year-old.
A 7-year-old and a belt. I mean, you're very busy.
And although we have more than one television in the house, they all seem to be his. So
what is he watching? What's he into? What's the 7-year-old? What's his?
We're really into it. We go through phases, right? So Thomas will forever live as probably the greatest one ever. We're super into Blaze and the Monster Machines.
Oh, yeah.
We're super into Peppa Pig.
Yes. Like, everyone loves Peppa Pig. Everyone loves Peppa. The stranglehold that pig has on the youth of today.
I know.
That's what I know.
I think it's the family interactions and with the other families, and then, you know, the fact that they all fall on the ground and snort and fall on the ground and just start giggling at the end of every episode. I'm like, oh, but I'm not mad at it, because I'm like, well, at least it's teaching him proper grammar, because he could be watching more American cartoons and then he'll sound like he's from Virginia like me, and sounding like his husband, my husband.
First of all, you got to stop saying that sounding like you sounds bad. Sounding like you sounds like honey over every piece of toast I've ever had.
I love honey too.
Secondly, I have to know this. I'm sorry, I have to ask. I've loved your time in Impact. I loved before you went to WWE and then after. I have to ask you about the train.
The train? I got shoved in front of.
I'm so sorry. I have to ask.
Looks like your train's pulling up.
What train? My train?
Is that your phone?
No, I don't think so.
Sure, I think your phone's ringing.
No, James, look. Oh, it's not my phone.
I got the same phone.
Boy, that's a long way down.
It was one of those things where I go like, this is what we're doing. This is where we're going. Okay. But I remember even James was like, well, this is weird. Like, what? How do you come back from this? And I was like, I don't know. I just died. I'm like, Kenny, you killed me. Right? Yeah, it was weird. But we shot that at behind the Cummins Station, which is where the old TNA headquarters were. Mm-hmm. That was like a big train yard behind there. And there was this like little trolley, which I guess used to be a food truck or something. And they obviously had the back out and they threw a mattress and we did the whole thing. And yeah, it was great television. People still remember it.
It was great.
Certain people on this podcast like to remember it frequently.
I think it's the funniest fucking thing that's ever happened to me. I'm sorry. Like, I think it's
like the fall into the.
It's so good. And that, like, that's like, look, like, that's what all of these things, wrestling, movies, TV, whatever you do, there are always these moments where it's like, okay, this is like a really funny, weird moment that wouldn't be able to happen in any other art form. Right?
Oh, no.
And so, yeah. Like, it doesn't, that moment doesn't take away from any of the performers, but it is one of those moments where it's like, I just need to remind you that Mickie James survived getting thrown in front of a train. And that feels really important to me. That you survived being thrown in front of a train.
And here's my thing is like, clearly, I thought that was ridiculous when I looked at it and I go, okay. I was also on my way out of the company, I think, at the time anyway. I was kind of like, as ridiculous as it is, I said, every moment, no matter what it is, you can either kind of take it and go like, oh, this is crap or whatever, and then just kind of half-ass do it. Or you can go like, oh, okay. And then you try to make it gold. No matter what it is, you have an opportunity, if you're given that television time, to make it and create it and make it gold. And people still remember that stupid train thing, as ridiculous as it was.
Here's the thing.
As ridiculous as it was, I was just like,
Here's the thing. I was hit by a bus. Literally me, myself, Danielle Radford, not a character, was walking down the street and got hit by a bus. So Mickie James getting hit by a train. And I have one of my best friends was hit by a train. And so like, as ridiculous as that was, it was also like, goddamn, yeah. Every woman I know who's been hit by a giant piece of machinery has survived. Like, weirdly, like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not even because I had that experience of, again, literally a bus hit me in my body, I woke up in a gutter. That storyline actually kind of was like, hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we do. We get hit by a train and then we...
I have a quick follow-up from Danielle. I unfortunately have to go very soon, but... I didn't realize you had a friend who got hit by a train. Should I be avoiding all forms of public transportation? So I feel like we've known each other for a while and I've just been lucky up to this point.
4 years.
Well, the scariest bit for me is that my son is obsessed with trains now.
Oh, no.
Do you hear the opening song to Thomas and just like shook back in fear?
Can I just explain to you that the amount of wooden train tracks, like obviously we have every version, the Trackmasters, we have Lego trains. The amount of wooden train tracks and trains that I have upstairs in his room is enough, and I know this per experience, to make a track through every room upstairs to go all the way and to live upstairs for a solid 2 weeks before I'm allowed to take it down and sweep the floors.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's amazing. Have you done this on social media?
I have tagged it once. I don't put a ton of Donovan stuff on social
because you don't want to put your kid on there. But
I'm a personal person. It's hard because it's like I'm a very personal person. Anyway, he wants to be a train engineer, and he's already told me. And I asked him if I could go on trips with him, and he said yes, and I can stay in the caboose. And I asked him if it was okay if I made the caboose like a tiny studio apartment. And, you know, just kind of made it the mommy booth. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, daddy's going to have to stay with you. And I was like, well, just kidding. I was like, that means he's going to want to add modern decor. I want to do French country. I just don't understand.
What a magical place to leave this conversation. Thank you so much, Mickie. We have to have you back. We have a million more questions for you about a million other things.
Of course.
We'll have links to so many of Mickie James's projects in our show notes. And hey, while you're there, find our Facebook and Twitter accounts where you can shower her with even more love. She deserves it. More love for Mickie James. More love for Mickie James. When we're back, we've got 3 things from wrestling that you should know about. That's up next on Tights and Tights.
Bria, what's your reader wheelhouse?
A woman on a journey, space, post-apocalyptic roads, and magical food. Mallory, what's your reader wheelhouse?
Werewolves, haunted houses, weird fiction, and books set in Florida for some reason.
We're Reading Glasses, and we want to know what your reader wheelhouse is.
We can use it to help you find more books that you love.
And avoid books that you don't. So whatever you like to read about and however you like to read it,
we want to help you read better.
Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Congratulations! You've won a ticket to attend an exclusive opportunity in a relaxing environment with two lovers.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a sort of proposition of sorts, but really it's an ad for our podcast. Wonderful. It's a show we do here on Maximum Fun where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into.
I'm Rachel McElroy, and you just heard Griffin McElroy, and we are excited for you to join us as we talk about movies and music and books.
Things like sneezing or the idea of rain.
Can you get news or information you can use?
Absolutely,
so.
You cannot, because we're here to talk to you about pumpernickel bread.
You can find new episodes on Wednesdays.
So catch the wave!
Tides and Bites Podcast. Tides and Bites.
Welcome back to Tides and Bites. I'm Lindsay Helk, and I'm joined today by
Danielle Radford.
That's you. It's you with the pretty glasses.
You shut up. Mickey likes pink glasses.
Mickey likes your glasses. Mickey left. So now we can talk about her and say how much we loved her and giggle behind her back. I love her so much.
I can't even. The whole time I'm literally like holding my cheeks like a little anime girl. Like I can't
proud of you.
It.
Proud of you. Proud of
do
us.
Do you have
proud
any
of
idea
how
much stuff
Mickey.
I didn't say? Ugh.
I do. Yeah, I actually do. Anyway, this week we are going to end the show by sharing some of the joy of wrestling with you. This is the Three Count. Danielle, what you got? What you got?
All right. So this was a banger week for AEW. And we've talked about like how MJF is obviously MJF and amazing, and his thing with Punk and the way that worked. But I also want to talk about, and I don't know if I've actually put him over yet, but I should. Eddie freaking Kingston. We all know Jericho is a legend, no matter how you feel about him or how you feel about where his wife might have been on January 6th. So it's kind of interesting to watch him get so fully, completely blown out of the water by a promo, you know. And so his promo last week is just amazing, and it's everything that you want. And again, it is such a great example of the difference between like an older school promo and a newer school promo. And Eddie Kingston just cannot be denied. So here's his promo from last week.
Give me the Chris Jericho that bled buckets in Tennessee. Let me get the Chris Jericho that got respect from one of my heroes, Tenryu, and war, and wrestled out there. Give me the Chris Jericho that turned WCW upside down. Give me the Chris Jericho that your close friend Levesque hated. Give me that.
Just really good at his job, turns out. Really good, really at, his good job. At his job. Do you have anything you'd like to put over this week, Maximum Fun? Do you have anything you'd like to add to the mix to give us a full three count since Mr. Halbert had to leave us?
So there's been a bunch of talk about wrestling video games lately, especially with 2K22 coming around. And this is kind of an unconventional thing to put over, but I know a lot of it's really common to be like, the way the games used to be is so much better than the way they are now. But I do think it's still fun to like look back on the memories of the games that you used to play and talk about and, you know, look at them honestly. And my favorite ones that I played when the GameCube and PS2 era came around, everybody else was playing SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, or, all those ones that were only on PS2. I was a kid with a GameCube and I played WWE Day of Reckoning 1 and 2. Those games.
Oh, baby, I was a GameCube baby.
I loved it. They were like, they're very the production values aren't as good objectively as the PS2 games, but I feel like seeing how they managed to do it, where like there's all these other WWE franchises rolling around and they still managed to make a game that was unique and was fun and had a really good match flow to it and was just like it felt like a fighting game, but with submission moves and stuff like that too. And I really, really loved it. I think they nailed the tone. So go back and look at some old gameplay videos of Day of Reckoning. If they are not giving you a legal option to do it, I would never recommend that you go out and find the files for it somewhere and play it however you can. I would never suggest you do that.
Life finds a way. If I learned nothing else from Jeff Goldblum, and do you know what? I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot from Jeff Goldblum, but I've learned that life finds a way.
Maybe make a dinosaur and the creator wrestler. I don't know. What can you do?
Exactly. We have a dinosaur wrestler. It's a wonderful time to be alive right now. Speaking of wrestlers that are wonderful and alive, I want to talk. I'm going to round out the three count by just sobbing into my microphone and telling you how much I love Cesaro. And I just, that's all I want to do, is I just want to say for about 4 minutes, Cesaro, 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 Cesaro. He's left. He has quietly exited contract negotiations from reports. I mean, we are recording this a little bit in the past, so stuff may have come out by now. More details may have come out. We may know where he's going to go. We may know what he's going to do. But this is not about news. This is about celebrating, which is quite frankly, one of the greats. I don't care if he hasn't had the championships that say that over and over around his waist. That man is one of my favorite wrestlers. He is one of my favorite people to watch. He is one of my favorite people to hear. I think he is great on the mic, and it always annoyed me that he never got enough time on the mic. He was one of my favorite people ever to interview because he was just an absolute fucking charming, articulate, kind man. He was so generous when I spoke to him. I also spoke to him and Sheamus together, and that was in its own special magical moment of just joyous friendship. There is nothing negative I have to say about this man, and I am choosing to celebrate and hope that this means he's going on to something fantastic and wonderful and amazing, whatever it is. I don't care if he wants to go back to Switzerland and open a coffee shop. I hope it's the greatest thing that ever happened. I'll go. I will go to Switzerland. Hopefully he will swing me when I get there. I love him. I love him. And all I'm doing is putting him over and saying how much I love him. I love him, you guys. He speaks five languages.
Switzerland's greatest export.
The greatest. The greatest. Watches, pa, chocolate, whatever. Give me Cesaro. Give me, 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 give me.
Claudio, yes, please. The idea of the Swiss swing, Swiss miss, I am losing it.
Oh, we could be in a tag team with him. He could be the Swiss Superman and we could be the Swiss miss, and it would be amazing.
The Swiss miss, drink my hot chocolate.
Yes, yeah, drink my Swiss miss hot chocolate, Swiss Superman coffee. It's all there, people.
It's beautiful.
Follow the red line, sheeple. It's all there.
I mean, you know, except for the fact that I would obviously be the I would not be the Naomi of that Funk is on a roll. I would clearly.
But we would have a great time. Now I'm just imagining our opening dance routine for I guess he'll go back to being Claudio again. And I'm down for whatever he does. I don't care whatever
or
he does.
Aunt.
I just love him so much.
Just do something.
And I'm really, really excited. But I just wanted to, I'm sure we'll do a main feature on him very soon.
Probably.
But I really did want to just give him the moment he deserves and say, yes, sir, thank you so much for everything. Thrilled to see what's next. And that does it for this episode of Tights and Fights. What? This week your hosts were me, Lindsay Gilk, also Hal Loblin, and Danielle Radford. I turned that around because I'm a narcissist. I put myself
first. You do what you do, babe.
I wasn't looking at the script properly. You guys, I did a hosting. I did a hosting.
Turns out you're really so good at a hosting. Exciting. I don't know if you...
Well,
did they, every, let's not. Everyone knows that, though.
Let's not go too far.
Shut up.
Anything our listeners should know about Danielle Radford?
Yeah, same as always. I am working on comic books and other books. You can buy them. I will tell you when to have those. Watch Honest trailers. I've worked on a couple of episodes of some TV that might be coming up, and I'll let y'all know when that happens. Just if you want to know about Danielle Radford and the business of being Danielle Radford, find me online. I try to plug that stuff as much there as I can when I'm not having existential dread or head dread or world dread. So,
yay! You can find me online doing much the same. I had some real fun existential dread, and I treated it by watching the old videos of One Direction on X Factor. Oh. Because I never saw that. I was living in America, and I never saw it. And I was like, look at these young scamps, these earnest young scamps. It's not wrestling, but it will treat your mind. I recommend it.
Sweet. Yeah.
Our producer is the shadow of the setting pun. Julian Burrell. Why would you make me say that, Julian? That was not cool. That was not okay. Don't make me pun for money. Not your pun whore. Our senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music, so we're putting him over for that. Find links to all of our social media channels in the show notes. Go follow those tweets from Julian. Get on that Twitter and see Julian's fire tweets, because they're pretty good.
Julian has been on one.
Spicy takes.
It's been
spicy
real
takes.
Good.
And I second all of them right now. They are very good. They're very good. If you love what we do, remember to hit those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Share us with all your friends. Thank you so much to the MaxFun members who make this show possible. And we'll be back next week for, you guessed it, more wrestling.
Ties and Bites Podcast. Ties and Bites.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.